Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. I am your host, James McCormick, Captain, United States Army, retired. And tonight we have a very, very good show in line here. We are going to discuss some current events and the rise of political trolls in America. How is social media aiding in the downfall of America? And let me tell you something, that is working very effectively. I just read a report that was actually from 2017 from intelligence gathered from Russians, you know, who said this is one of their number one things that they wanted to do. They wanted to create enough dissension in America to take our mind off of the things that we really need to be thinking about. It is nothing more than a lot of people think that it's a political thing, but I'm telling you, this is driven by outside interference, and you know, that's been proven. We also have the absence of evidence in many things. You see people that are falsely accused, and it's almost like an era of McCarthyism, some are telling me, that that people were simply accused of being communists, and now the buzzword or the dog whistle word is socialist. And, you know, it is something that we're going to talk about tonight, and it goes all across the board. And it basically, anyone that dares to speak out with a difference of opinion, you know, basically is slandered beyond unbelievable belief sometimes, you know. So has slander replaced debate in America? And are we losing the ability to discern truth from fiction? We will also be discussing some unique political candidates in America, from presidential to local hopefuls, that are coming out with plans that range from $1,000 a month check. Now, for those of you that follow me on social media, Facebook, again, it's always good to have some good civil debate, and I post a lot of things to generate that civil debate, and believe me, we have some very interesting conversations. But I posted that one of the presidential candidates is looking at a program where they pay each American citizen $1,000 a month, and you know, instead of raising the minimum wage. So that's the part that people are not catching on to. But anyways, again, and I got a lot of different answers. What I was looking for was a truthful answer. Would you take that money if the government was sending it to you? And a lot of people say no, no, no. And I believe that there are some people with convictions that would mail it back. But I'm telling you, I'm just wondering if it was mailed to you automatically every month, and nobody knew. I mean, everybody's getting it. Would you really send that check back every month? Now, some of you might, but I'm going to say the majority might do it the first, the second, or even the tenth time. But I say eventually one of those checks would come in and you would keep it. So we're going to talk about that as well. And some of the other things, other plans that you see, everything from agriculture plans to how are we going to deal with veteran suicide. I'm telling you, I'm not hearing enough candidates talk about that. And you know, meanwhile, everybody's fighting the Republican-Democrat game. We still have 22 veterans a day that are killing themselves. And we have a horrible suicide rate in America, period. Horrible. Depression is an all-time high, folks, an all-time high. And we're supposed to be living in the middle of this economic blissful time in America where we shouldn't be experiencing this. But yet some places are seeing, you know, especially in the Midwest, they're dealing with suicide rates that are phenomenal, out the roof. We're also going to talk about the basically some of the other candidates that are talking about totally dismantling all government agencies. So they want to look at, you know, everybody, you know, you hear a lot of folks talking about cutting the bureaucracy. I'm a big advocate of ending the bureaucratic socialism that is being pushed by both sides. The GOP pushes it just as much as the Democrat Party pushes it. And we have grown into this massive government entity. If you don't believe me, go to Washington, D.C. sometime and visit some of the federal buildings and see how many people are working in those buildings. Go try to get a parking space. You know what I mean? I'm in D.C. quite often, and you know, a lot of them do a great, great job. But you have people in office now that thinks that we should create other entities, other agencies, more layers of bureaucracy. And, you know, that's where me and some of my friends disagree on. I don't think we should be doing that. But, again, I want to hear some of the callers, how you feel about this. And then also I want to update on some recent Veterans Visibility Day activity in the Capitol in West Virginia. And ask some of these other states, do you have a Veterans Visibility Day in your capital where your veterans get to come in and basically they are giving, you know, rock star access to all the elected officials. Now, I was really a little bit disappointed this year in the reception and in the numbers of veterans. The ones that showed up, God bless you. And thank you for caring enough for your state and your fellow veterans for showing up. But we definitely weren't able to pack the house. And in addition, there were some very cold reception, you know, by some of the politicians. and no one really got a chance to do a lot like we normally do. So it was, felt like a very strange time, and I'm not sure what causes that, but you know. And we're going to talk about some winners and losers that are coming out of these local debates that we're seeing. Also an update on some more stolen valor cases and many who are flying under the radar, claiming to be injured in the defense of their nation when in fact they never served in combat. All this and more tonight on Continue Mission with my good friend Richard Kilblain. And he's going to offer, you know, here's how we play this. Obviously, there's some of my personal beliefs that are in this, but in order to have this balance, you know, Rich represents one side of it, and I represent the other side of it. So we do a lot of homework on this stuff before we jump on this radio show and start talking and just, you know, blabbering off at the mouth. We have a lot of followers, about 80,000 that are following. We get about 200,000 views. Listens on this radio show during the week. If you go look at some of the you know, some of the data that comes out, it's really cool to see that, and it's pretty amazing, especially if you understand where we came from and how we created this radio show that's been going strong for a very long time now. So you know, we're going into year two of this, and it's been wonderful. Yeah, it's hard to believe, right? Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's been almost 2 years now, but here we are, and we're still going strong, and we're knocking it out of the park. And I think a lot of that is because we bring reality. I mean, this is the reality. This is how people talk in America, and sometimes they don't talk in America. And sometimes we get some really psychos on this radio show, like 2 weeks ago when we had a couple of psychos call in and threatening to shoot me. And David and Ashley are welcome to call on here anytime. But obviously, you know, threatening to shoot me on the radio is just one of those things that, you know, that just doesn't fare too well with the FCC. So I would caution you, don't let your passion and, you know, get you caught up into this. We have very solid debates, and we are open to those debates. But we're definitely not open to open acts of, or, you know, discussions of violence and things that don't belong on the radio. We are trying to promote a level of civility, but you know, we bite back. You know, if we get slapped, we slap back. I mean, it's just kind of the way that it is. But we don't do so in a physical way. We do it in a way where we're trying to find the middle ground. So, anyways, we got Richard Kilblain on here, and. You know, he's, hold on just a second, Rich, I'm trying to get you on here. I don't know what's going on here. Okay. I think you're coming in. There you are, old buddy. How's it going today?
James, it's going pretty good. Yeah. Taught my first college class today.
Now that sounds exciting. What class did you teach? A history class, right?
Well, I'm filling in for a good friend of mine who, happened to have his brother bought him a vacation, and they're doing a family vacation on a cruise ship pulling into Bayonne that's infected with coronavirus. Okay, so anyway, yeah, I called him. I said, "Hey, did your trip get canceled?" But anyway, he asked me to cover for him. We've been friends for 20 years, and it's an ethics class, and. Well, philosophy is all bullshit anyway. There's like all opinion. So, actually, on that note,
an ethics class right now. Yeah.
All right. Not to take anything away from the Greeks. I mean, the Greeks are the founding fathers of philosophy because they wrote it down. I'm sure there's a lot of Celts out there that look. When you got a lot of time on your hands. That's when you start philosophizing. Every soldier that's been downrange is a philosopher, because every philosophical question begins with one word. What is it, James? Why? Why?
Why?
Okay.
Why?
When you get downrange, you got look to philosophize. You have to have a lot of time on your hands. Okay. And you're downrange. You got a lot of time on your hands, and you're sitting there going, "Why me? Why am I here?" Okay.
I know.
And
I know.
There's a lot of answers to that. Okay. Why is a prod question. Okay. And so anyway, you know, I'm covering in on his class on ethics, and it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, you know, I'm taking an ethics class right now. It's a 300 level course. I'm also taking a really cool course on the rise and fall of Nazi Germany, which is the 400 level course. Yeah, and it's really cool. It's actually a 500 level course. To be honest with you,
a lot of people are making comparisons between the rise of any kind of dictatorship, fascism,
yeah.
Nazism, socialism,
right.
because. We're seeing the roots
yeah.
of it here too, here in America, and
yeah.
we're blind to it. Okay,
yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, and it exists on both sides, and it comes from a level of ignorance of history. I think that people don't see it.
Amen, James. Amen. Amen. There you go.
Mm-hmm. You know,
our
I think
school, our education system has failed America. We don't teach civics.
Absolutely.
And we don't teach history, okay?
Yeah.
So we
and
have
I wish they would.
Generations of people who are ignorant of their of not just our history, but the history of the world. So when someone's trying to sell you a package, that if you have no understanding of how it works in other countries, or if some, you know, how do you know whether it does work? Or when they try to make comparisons between Trump and Hitler, or any of the Democratic candidates and Stalin or whatever. How do you know?
They do that all the time.
If you have not done the homework, if you have not studied history, you're just believing what somebody tells you. That makes you gullible.
well, it does. It makes you a sucker, is what it does. And the fact that you see that, you know, you see that playing out, and I see it a lot. I see it. You know, in the conversations, and you see me on Facebook. I put things on Facebook to try to generate debate, but sometimes I'm poking, because I want citizens to come together and have a civil conversation. Now, when someone comes in and they get all fired up, and it's like, dude, it's Facebook. You've never met me before in your life, and you're coming on here. I mean, dude, I'm gonna kill you. I'm telling you, Rich, I could send you some of these messages I get. If I really wanted to, I could send a lot of people to jail. But I don't do that just because I know that they're just caught up in the passion. And, hell, nobody's ever showed up. You know, I mean, I've waited and waited on this this imaginary, you know, enemy that continues to come. And I remind people that, you know, hey, look, I have been through Fallujah and Baghdad in its worst days. I am not afraid to talk to some little troll on the internet.
No. I think that if they do any homework and they find out, you've already been shot three times if you're still coming out. Yeah. It's like, this guy's got to be crazy, so I don't want to mess with him.
Yeah, well, but really, honestly, the goal is civility. It is honestly a level of civility. And it's like, dang it, people.
We're
losing our country.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're losing our country because of
that. We have lost that.
And stop worshiping people. Huh?
Yeah, it's all Trump's fault. Yeah. Right.
No, I don't think it's all Trump's fault.
I'm joking.
You know what, though? I mean, he does own some of it.
Everybody owns some of that. Yeah.
And it's like, but what they don't realize is this. Sometimes you say something.
Yeah.
Well, I wish somebody would just get rid of that guy. And well, the next thing you know, somebody like Dylan Root freaking shows up. You know what I mean? Some idiot like that, or the guy that shot the people in the Walmart building, shows up and says, I'm here. And they carry out these heinous attacks. For what reason? Because they feel like they've been prodded into it. And I think that's kind of but. And I think social media drives a lot of that. And there have been many. So I've done a little study, and I was looking at, you know, how many people that do radio shows that are somewhat controversial, and nearly all of them get death threats. And And some of them actually get killed. So it just, it happens. So you always have to be on your feet.
Yeah, but fortunately, you live in a state that hasn't restricted your gun rights. So
I carry a pistol with me everywhere I go.
That's why you can say all the things you want to say, right?
Yeah, come on in.
Hey, I'm a hillbilly in West Virginia. Come on over here and try to shoot my ass.
Somebody said, "Well,
good luck."
So why do you only carry two magazines with me? And I carry a 45. It's a beautiful 45. Springfield.
I heard the best excuse for carrying two magazines, at least one, more than one magazine, and it's correct. And that is, most jams are all caused by a defective magazine.
True.
So if you load the wrong magazine into your pistol, you're lucky to get one shot off, and that's it. So you've got to change mags real fast, right?
And I shoot a lot, and I love practicing. I had not been shooting my rifles as much as as my pistols, just because that's a wrist breaker. That 45, I call it an old wrist breaker.
Yeah,
but it is a beautiful firearm, and my soldiers actually bought that for me, when I retired.
What kind is it?
It's a Springfield 45. It's a nickel and
government model or what?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is definitely.
Nice. What year on it?
It's not an original. It's a brand new Springfield. They bought it in 2009.
So
it's a copy. It had it engraved.
What was really popular when I was in for officers was Colt Commanders, which was a 45, but it was accurized. So, you would carry that in lieu of your issue 45 because it was accurate and you'd fire all the same ammo. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love the 45 and it works well for me. And so I carry two magazines, which is 14 rounds. And I figured, if, I'm not bragging, but I don't miss. You see what I'm saying? I don't know why. I've always been gifted with that ability and been able to have that ability to shoot under extreme pressure.
So that's a warning. So you're saying this, you're bragging right now as a warning to anybody?
No, I'm not bragging. We're talking about the whole breathing control.
I'm just pulling your chain, James.
I know.
Because you started the conversation off talking about people wanting to shoot you, and now you're talking about, I've been blessed. I hit my targets, and even under pressure when people shoot at me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you better shoot better than Al-Qaeda did, or else you end up just like them, I'll tell you that.
No, it wasn't Al-Qaeda. It was the Mahdi militia that was trying to kill
you. Well, whatever. Al-Qaeda, Mahdi militia. Let me tell you what. They were all bad people.
Oh,
my God.
But I tell you, James, I've told you this before, you got more in common with those guys who are trying to kill you than the people hiding behind the trucks behind you.
Yeah, and people will look at you kind of strange, but those of us that have been in warfare, we develop a level of respect for our enemy, especially if they display some courage. And there was a lot of them that displayed some exceptional courage.
Yeah.
Not to the point to where, I wanted them to win. I still think they're crazy, psychotic idiots, and everything that they got, they basically did. They were
believing what they were told. Right.
Which kind of leads us into our discussion today. So now we have these
– Good segue.
First thing I want to go into. Yeah. Good segue. Yeah, the political trolls. The political trolls. I read this report that came out. And let me pull this thing up again because it was a great report. But then I looked at it. I said, holy cow. I said, when did this come out? Well, it's 2017. So it was like 2017. And it's like, that's been quite a while. Since it's come out, hold on a second, let me pull it up here. It's just a good one. Um, No, you know, I get so much junk here. I have to dig through this thing. Anyways, well, so basically it was a report that was talking about how the Russians have deployed, whatever you want to call it, political trolls. They pay people to essentially get on Facebook, Twitter, wherever, and just get Americans to fight, to argue with each other. You know, and it has become such a distractor. And social media, because you don't have some of the limitations on social media. I mean, some people, they get on there and they say, I'm going to do this to you or do that to you. Yeah, you can get that taken down or removed. But these political trolls, these trolls in general, they're pretty sharp. They know how to walk that gray line. And so that, you know, number one, they're not going to get banned or blocked, but they're going to be able to, you know, to get that controversy going. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans, and don't get upset at me at this, but the truth is a lot of Americans are suckered right into it. And, you know, they think that it's somehow going to make a difference. So what do you think about that? You see that, I'm sure.
No, I've had some really good debates. And I enjoy it. Every now and then, you know, the problem I have is people who keep reposting propaganda. And they're just stirring up, you know, they're stirring up an argument. And I'm like, why do that? You know, you talked about the media and what we don't have. Or let's start out. It doesn't matter whether it's Fox, CNN, MSNBC. You know, they get those talking heads together. It's an echo chamber. There might be one person. So you have a panel of 5 to 7 people. There might be one person who has the counter argument. That is not balanced. And they can't present a really solid. They'll throw their idea out, but then there's 3 or 4 people who are going to counter that. There's no balance, okay?
Right.
And that's what's missing, you know, for – now, I will admit, Fareed Zakaria on Sunday morning, he has probably the most balance. The experts he bring in are real experts, and they present an honest opinion that is – it isn't slanted to the left. Once in a while, a few of them – but I watch it, and some of the answers he gets surprises him. He was expecting it to be, you know, a liberal answer, and the guy's really saying, no, it's balance. And that's what we're missing. So you're getting on the left and the right. Everybody is, like, reinforcing their beliefs without a balance. And if you present the counterargument, you either get shouted down or you get outnumbered. You get ganged up on, okay? So that happens in the national news, and then it carries over into social media, okay? And so what you have is, I mean, I could see it if you throw something out. Okay, I have a step-nephew. He'll throw that crap out there because he's just ornery, okay? It's a kill-blame trait, okay? Because I know he's a good kid, but he will say the most outrageous thing just to stir up a fight. And he sits back and laughs. He'll get 2 people arguing with each other, right? And if it starts to calm down, he'll interject again. That's just him. But there's most people who, no, they're passionate about this, and they're, you know, they get caught up in it, and they can't listen to reason. And that's why we're in serious trouble. And every now and then, I'll tell you, on my step-nephew's Facebook page, there's a friend of his who's an African-American civil rights leader who is from the 60s. And you can tell by his talk, you know, about what age group he is, but well-informed, and we've had some good debates, like 3 times. And the first time it gets really passionate. And to keep in mind that, look, I can't tell you what the right argument is, okay? I just know if you're arguing with a liberal and you're winning, they start calling you names, okay? The right may do the same thing. I don't know because I haven't I don't really argue with those
they
guys
do.
That much. Yeah.
Well, they call you socialist.
So,
they call you socialist.
All right.
That's
so
the
you
thing.
Get the name call. Yeah. When you know you're winning an argument, they're calling you names.
Okay? Oh, see, I win a lot of
yeah, I know. That's the whole point. And that's what I bring up. I said, guys, the moment – when logic has failed you, now, with liberals, it takes a while. I've had these debates that go on for days. But it's challenging. It forces – it's emotional also because they sit there and they start – they're really trying to drag you into a name-calling contest. And it's hard not to get caught up into it. And then answer their questions with logic. And the thing is, I'd argued with this guy enough. By the third time I had a debate with him, it was really, it was civil. We never agreed on anything, but there was definitely no name calling. Okay. There was no real emotion in it. And I enjoyed that debate. Okay. We're just following, all you got to do is think seriously. You got to try to empathize with the other side. And that's okay. If you want to win the debate, you got to understand the other argument. And that's one of the things is you got to be informed. Go on the internet. When you see someone post something, go check it out. Just go on Google or whatever search engine and type in that and see what's really up there. Okay. For example, someone posted something about Virginia passed an assault weapons ban. And I'm like,
did they really?
To me because
I've never heard of
that. That's what the post was, right? So anyway, I clicked on it and it gave the bill and I'm reading the bill and I'm like, that's really ridiculous. And I looked at the name of the guy that presented and I said, that guy withdrew that bill. So I went in and I Googled and I found out like, no, there is an assault weapons ban that is going through it, but it's not likely to pass the Senate, okay? So then I had to post on there, and guys, this ain't really not correct. But all you got before – look, anybody who's wanting to – don't post something because it strikes your emotional cord. Look it up. Just look it up to make sure it's not fake.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you really do want to start to piss people off and start an argument. But it isn't helping the country. That's the reality.
No, it's not. It's not helping the. It's not helping the country at all. I'll tell you, the problem comes down to just what you said. Is and in the internet world, believe me, I have learned and seen so much. Well, of course, I work on. A lot of awards and stuff. So I've seen people fabricate and make stuff up and try to get it passed through, and the internet's made it really easy. I mean, really dang easy. You know what I mean? That you can take documents and you can take emails and you can switch names and you can switch dates and you can do a lot of things with that. And it's hard for you to tell. Yeah, it used to be, in our day, Rich, we had typewriters, so it was pretty easy to catch a fraud. But now, by God, it's kind of difficult. And they got all of these news media, sources that are just feeding the airwaves with nonsensical jackassery.
and that's another thing. Okay, and glad you put it up, pointed that out. Okay.
All right.
So for those people... Yeah, when you see something and it's an article, pay attention to what the source of that is.
Yeah, cite the source. Yeah.
Babylonia, that's fake news. I mean, really, it's
Babylon.
Fiction. Duffelbag blog, hilarious.
Duffelbag blog.
That is hilarious. But it's fiction, okay? And
100%.
But there's reputable news sources. They're keep in mind, even when you're talking the Washington Post, the New York Times, New York Post, or whatever, they're slanted. So, you know, if you pay attention after a while, you begin to pick up on it. And you're going, oh, this article's from the Washington Post. No, Washington Times or the New York Post. They're playing on, like, we know the New York Times. Well, that's left-leaning. New York Post, well, that's right-leaning, okay? Right, Bart, right-leaning. So once you understand it, but there's others that are totally fiction, okay, untrustworthy. So pay attention to your sources. Get used to, you know, when you read the headlines, someone has posted it, look at what the source is, and after a while you're going to see the pattern. And you'll be able, and then, you know, if you have any slight doubt, yeah, I know it's an echo chamber. It's saying exactly what you want to believe. But just go on a search engine and just type that in and see what else is out there to see if it's really, really true. Okay?
Yeah.
Rather
I agree
than
with
what
you.
Somebody wants to be true.
Well, and there's a lot of really awesome, good people that are in this world. I mean, and I'm not kidding you, there's some wonderful people in this world that on both sides of the political aisle. And I'm telling you, this name-calling and all this other stuff is not helping. You know, I have a lot of friends that I'm supporting in the upcoming election. Some are Democrats, some are Republicans, and people look at me and say, I'm an anomaly to them. I mean, it's just like, how can you, because they're so focused on the one party. If you don't vote straight, you know, and I'm going to be honest with you, Rich, I see it more on the right than I do on the left, because my left friends are like, okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Your friend so-and-so, and he's running for agriculture commissioner. Okay, well, that's cool. And I support him, and I send him money. You know, I do all the things that you can do, legally do, to help these people win, and I advise them all. But the one thing I tell every single one of them is that you have to promote civility. If you don't promote civility, I no longer support you. At that point, when you start to get into this world of name-calling or whatever, and, you know, and I'm the guy that gives to your campaign every month. I don't just give a one-time $10 donation. You know what I mean? It's a monthly stipend, and I can afford to do that with 8 or 9 people. And I do that because I believe in what they're putting out. And I think those are the best people for not just our state, but our country. And, you know, we're both fans of Tulsi Gabbard. I think that Tulsi Gabbard is a candidate. You know, if someone doesn't pick her up as their vice president pick, they are ignorant. And that is just all there is to
it.
I
see
believe
her as
that.
The champion of the moderate Democrats. Okay?
Yeah, she is.
Mm-hmm. But the problem is the Democratic Party is having some serious problems and going to the left, and they're admitting it. Really, there's two parties
in
one. Sure,
absolutely.
Yeah, there is a socialist party inside the Democrats.
Well, they call them
the
Democratic Socialists, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
you have the same thing in the GOP. You do not have everyone thinks that there's unity.
No,
but let me tell
right.
you something.
There is the,
if there was full unity, Mitt Romney had nothing to gain by that vote. He had everything to lose by that vote. I sincerely
he
think
was bitter. No. I will tell you, Mitt was bitter.
Well, he's sure.
Mitt was bitter. We knew he was going to vote against. He was vote against Trump. He was bitter. Okay.
Yeah. Well, bitter, but he is a man that is deeply and profoundly religious, and you know that he is a Mormon.
Well, let me put it this way. Here's the thing I should say.
Yeah.
Every candidate should be allowed to vote their conscience, right or wrong. Everybody.
Right, absolutely.
We would not have these partisan votes.
I'm telling you right now.
Everybody
that's watching right now.
Conscience.
Now you see what's going on, you know, and this is where our president should be more presidential. Now's not the time to become vindictive, because now you're losing support. Now, all of those folks that voted against it, and they may have said, hey, this is really sincerely I believe in it, but they're, because of all of this, he's created the doubt in the constituents' minds that said the only reason why that you voted to acquit him is because you were afraid of the fallout. And Mitt Romney stood up and said, you know, I'm going to take it.
I'm going to tell you, look, I've stated this before. This whole thing is partisan.
Mm-hmm.
The impeachment, you voted.
Oh, there's no
the
doubt
House
about
voted
that.
For impeachment because they wanted
horribly
to
done.
Really, this whole, look.
Horribly done.
Holding an impeachment in an election year, what the hell are you thinking? And
horrible.
You didn't even charge him with a crime. You didn't charge him with a crime. Abuse of power? The thing is, it's all political.
Well, wasn't that what
is,
they did with Johnson, too? Wasn't that what they did with Johnson?
I have not studied Johnson's impeachment, all right? So I can't tell you about that one. I lived through Clinton's impeachment, so I know how that one went. And, of course, I was in high school. I don't think I was in high school. I think I was in the Army when Nixon
you were. You joined the Army
removal.
In 73, right?
Yeah.
So
those are the ones I'm more familiar with, okay? Mm-hmm. And the thing is, this thing, okay, this whole impeachment thing is about the 2020 mm-hmm. election. That's what it mm-hmm. really all comes down to. And that State of the Union address, the antics by both Trump and let's add State of the Union address and the National Prayer Breakfast. The antics that were there are all geared towards the 2020 election.
How ridiculous.
Everything
is
political.
Yeah.
Everything is political. Trump awarding Rush Limbaugh, the guy's theatrical, okay, just keep that in mind. Awarding mm-hmm. Rush Limbaugh, who is the right-wing, he is the voice of the conservative movement. Give him the Presidential Medal of Freedom in that speech was appealing to his base. Now, because I've been watching people post some of the racist things that Rush Limbaugh has said, okay, the thing is, it was all Trump is winning his base. By doing that, he has won over. Any conservatives that had doubt about Trump, he's won mm-hmm. them over. Whatever you're seeing, don't think of mm-hmm. justice. There is no justice mm-hmm. in this. It is about mm-hmm. November, the second Tuesday of November 2020.
Yeah.
That's what it's all, everything
you know,
you're going to see from here on out.
Yeah, that's just sad.
Okay.
It's really sad because it's like they're not running the country. And, you know, I mean, I'm telling you, I was in our mm-hmm. state capitol it was all Veterans Visibility Day, okay? And in walks the Chinese delegation. We had Korean War veterans that fought against the Chinese that were at this event, you know? They're in their late 80s. You know, and they're sitting there looking. Here comes the Chinese walking in. And it's like, holy cow. And, you know, they felt very uncomfortable about this. And it's like cutting deals in states and in countries with countries that have traditionally been our enemies. And they're still your enemies. Like it or not, the Russians
All right,
are
James,
not our friends.
James, let me make a comment about China. All right. Let me make a comment. There is genocide going on in China. All right.
Oh, no doubt.
Okay. Had Hitler followed the Chinese model, he could have gotten away with killing as many Jews as he wanted, and the rest of the world wouldn't have paid attention, because if they had become dependent on Germany economically, as we have become, China owns this country.
Yeah,
they do.
International
debt. They own our sports. They own Hollywood. If you criticize China, you're going out of business, okay? You can't criticize China, and they're committing genocide, and no one's saying boo to it, because it's the bottom dollar. Hitler didn't understand that. Hitler wanted to create a super race. He didn't understand if he bought his adversaries, he could have gotten away with everything he wanted, because China is doing that right now.
Hmm. Yeah, well, so, and we have that, you know, so now they've got some sort of a deal with the Chinese going to bring supposedly $6 billion. I mean, and they always want to throw out these crazy figures that really are just, it's beyond reality. It's just, it's not going to happen the way that they say it's going to happen. They're going to buy up big swaths of property and land here, and they're going to keep it forever. And so it's like, you know, that's just the way it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And we're going to have, you know, they're worried about immigrants, and they're worried about all of this stuff, but yet, damn, you're sleeping with the enemy. You know what I mean? And you're worried about the Mexican that's going to cross the border and work on the and pick vegetables and then go back in the wintertime. And they've done that for years. You know what I mean? But you're not worried about the Chinese and the Russians, which are communists now. I had somebody try to argue, oh, they're not really communists, they're this. Okay, I don't care what you call it. It's still freaking communism, man. It's still a bunch of commies. And that's just the way that it is. And they're buying stuff up, and they're entrenching themselves in our day-to-day affairs, and nobody seems to care. As long as they're getting paid. That's what they care about, you know, we're getting paid.
You just nailed it right there, James. That's it.
I'm getting paid.
Nobody,
I'm getting paid. I'm getting
look,
laid. I get
cares
this,
about
you know,
minorities
whatever.
Nobody's getting killed as long as you're getting paid. If you get what
that's
you
terrible.
Want,
you know
nobody
I mean?
Cares.
But it's true, though. It's true. Nobody cares. And I do, though. I sincerely care about that kid that's in inner city Detroit. I think that that kid should have just as much as an opportunity, a life, than that kid living in the eastern hollows of Kentucky or West Virginia or Florida or wherever the hell you're from. You know, they should be able to have the same access to education, health care, safety, the ability to walk from their home to school without being shot or being beat up or molested or robbed or whatever. And I think our focus is off of America, and it is on people's individual selfish desires. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans are being duped into supporting this. What's your thought?
Well, okay, I was just thinking, though, I said, you know why we can actually slam China? Because we don't have any sponsors yet. As soon as
yeah,
we start
absolutely.
Getting sponsors, we're going to have to, like, tone down our rhetoric about China, okay?
Yeah.
I don't want their sponsorship.
I really don't.
Yeah,
I don't want their sponsorship.
Yeah.
I am not going to be a whore.
Actually, okay, hold on. I'm going to say something a lot of you don't know. James had a daytime podcast that had 3 million listeners.
Sure.
And he gave that up. And
I did.
To keep this one. He had 3 million listeners on that. It had 15 minutes of advertising. He gave that up to run to maintain this one, a 2-hour podcast with no sponsors, we can talk about what we want and just keep talking, right?
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. You're walking the talk, James. You know, it's one thing to say. I'm glad I don't have any sponsors. Well, that's easy to say because you don't have any sponsors. No, you had a show with sponsors and you gave it up and you kept this one. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. James is not a hypocrite on this one.
Yeah.
All right. So
I'm not.
Yeah, no, look, everybody deserves the needs, you know, peace. No one should live in fear. No one should. And everybody should have that opportunity to success, and that opportunity to success is education. Education's what got me out. Well, actually, the Army got me out of that small town in Oklahoma, but it was education that opened the other doors for me. Okay. And now that isn't, that doesn't mean everybody has to go to college, right?
No,
education includes bow tech, right?
Trade.
Yeah.
Education includes learning the family business. You know, my family
had bricklayers. Trade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They learned a trade. I had family members that used to do, you know, work in wood and leather and you know, I mean, my grandfather told me about, you know, his grandfather was a blacksmith, you know, and was a darn good one. And you know, everybody just learned a trade and a skill. You're right. You're exactly
mm-hmm.
right.
Yep. No, my brother, who is a career Marine, retired as a gunny, he loved working with wood. He loved working with wood. And so whenever he had time off, I mean, he was doing all these projects, carpentry, around Southern California. And then when he retired, that's what he did, is start refurbishing homes, fixing them up, and then turn them into rentals, okay? He loved that.
Yeah.
All right?
Right.
So, you know, for a number of people, there is something about working with your hands and building something. Look, you know, my whole career is about telling other people, either doing training to kill people and teaching people how to kill people, but to pay my way through school, or when I got out to get my master's, I worked concrete.
Right.
And I had a sense of satisfaction I never had before. When I'd go out and work on building, laying the foundation for a building and then, you know, working the roof and stuff like that, and come back and look at it, I'm like, that, I had a hand in building that, and that thing's going to last longer than I am going to leave. That's really incredible. You know, I've never had that kind of, that's not the kind of stuff I worked on in the Army. So for all you people out there who work with your hands and build stuff, I get it, you know, and there's an incredible satisfaction. And that's the thing my brother was soon. I remember his first carpentry project was building a table, and he was hooked from there on out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's crazy that, you know, we've got ourselves into this huge debt, and obviously I like going to school, obviously, because by God, I've went for many years, and I still go. And I think that, you know, I'm 52 years old, and I'm looking to get another degree. Now, I just feel like it's my time, you know, to do something else. And, you know, I've studied religion, I've studied business, I've studied criminal justice. You know, I'm like you. I was in the Army, you know, was an enlisted soldier for a long time, became an officer. You know, I've walked that walk. I think it's staying occupied in those things that while being a soldier, there were things that you do that you're not always proud of, you know, but. You have to do these things, you know, like, you know, whenever you take somebody out, you know, and that is a very real thing. And that has happened.
James, I'm going to tell you
in our lives.
James, I have a lot of regrets in my life. I have hurt a lot of people. The regrets I have is the people I hurt that I did not intend to hurt. But I will tell you this, all the people I intended to hurt, I have no fucking regrets about that.
Well, neither do I, but I do still feel bad that we were put in that position to have to do that.
James, no, here's the thing. You should get past it, because here's the thing. To me, look, I was a boxer.
Right.
When I stepped in that ring, there was one time I wanted to hurt the guy on the other side. And not because I knew him, as I knew his coach. And his coach taught people to he would teach them to rabbit punch. He was the editor of the magazine. He screwed up a lot of my art. And he was teaching his guys to cheat. So I went in there to punish. That's the only guy I went in to punish in the ring. I was just beat him senseless until the last. And I told my trainer, and I said, yell when it's the last 30 seconds in the third round, because I'm just going to get him on the ropes and finish him off. I am going to punish him until the end, and then I'll knock him out, all right? I didn't knock him out. I had him, and I was and then that's where I realized I was hitting the wrong place, okay? I had to do a study of what part of the jaw you got to hit. But
mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
No, the thing is, I see war like a sport. Okay.
Yeah. Because
when you were at the Wallen buyout and all the ambushes you were in, you are in combat. There are rules, not mm-hmm. many, but there are rules. Okay.
Sure.
But the people you are shooting at have accepted the risk, the same risk you have accepted. And you should mm-hmm. not feel any guilt about that.
No.
You're up there on that Humvee with the 50 cal rounds are going by your head. And the same thing. And that's why I say you have more in common with those guys who are shooting at you than the guy.
Yeah. You're kind of coming in and out a little bit there, Rich. You're coming in and out a little bit. I don't know if your signal's going bad or what. But.
Oh, well, I got my headphones. But anyway, the guys you're shooting at, the guys are shooting at you, they have also accepted that they could die.
Right, right.
And both of you have gone into this combat situation with the same goal in mind. Kill your enemy. You've accepted that but achieving Jack takes priority over your life. Okay?
Yeah.
And by the grace of God and your skill is mm-hmm. who comes out alive. And you should not feel guilty about it. Feel guilty about any collateral damage, any civilians that are killed, the innocent. You should never feel guilty. You should never feel guilty about killing the enemy. You should lament.
Well, we never killed the innocent. That's a fact. I mean, that is an absolute, that's the one thing I can lay around at night and say,
Mm-hmm.
Because, like during the Battle of Biop, whenever all those kids come running out of that house, mm-hmm. we didn't shoot until the kids got out of the line of fire. Now, they kept shooting at us, and boy, whenever the kids got hit, then we really poured it on them because, that pissed a lot of us off. Now, those guys that died after that, they got exactly what they deserved, and they earned every bit of it. And what I'm talking about is the feeling that, man, we've got ourselves into a position in our life to where we have to send human beings out to kill each other to establish whatever. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm not talking about
that's a higher level question. All right. That's the question of just and unjust war. All right.
Yeah.
There's a number of movies that I love, and there's some great quotes. And mm-hmm. there's a number of movies made about the Three Musketeers, but my mm-hmm. favorite is with Oliver Reed. Okay, and there's a scene, and I think it's it was so long they divided it up into two parts, and it was in the second part, and this is where D'Artagnan has asked his friends, the Three Musketeers, to mm-hmm. help him deliver a message to the Prince of Wales, okay? So they've got across mm-hmm. and across France and then the English Channel. And mm-hmm. I can't remember which of the Three Musketeers, he's going, why are we doing this? Why are we going to risk ourselves to get... And his buddy goes, so when the king asks you to go up and fight the enemy... Mm-hmm. He goes, no. I said, so why should you make life so complicated? Keep it simple. We're going out to die for France. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. I mean, why should life be so complicated? And and that's it. I mean, if you do ask, okay, again, we're now getting into philosophy, James. That is
absolutely.
What, okay, when you're out there, for all you soldiers who are
ethics,
out there,
and
you're sitting there,
yeah.
You're sitting there at a FOB I loved Afghanistan because they didn't have those damn lights on. You could stare up at the stars and see the Milky Way. And you're sitting there going like, why am I here? And the thing is when you're downrange, you got a lot of empty time on your hands, and that's where you ask these questions. Well, do some reading because there's a lot of writing about it, the just and unjust wars. The thing is, accept it as combat, and combat is a duel between armies, okay? And the opponents have accepted the risk. I had no problem with it because when I stepped into the ring, I didn't have any conflict with the guy on the other side. But I was going. But to me, he was a piece of meat, okay? And I was a grinder. I was going to just pummel that guy, all right? I didn't hate him, and if I knocked him out, I hurt him. I would feel, okay, every fighter will feel bad if you've crippled an opponent because you don't intend to do that. All you intend to do is knock him out. Now, remember, boxing, unlike other sports, the way to win is scoring. But in boxing, there's three ways to win. Knocking the guy out, and you want to knock him out as quick as you can because that fight's over. Cutting. You can end a fight by a cut or by points. And if you – to win by points means you've got to go the distance, and that's where you get – both of you get hurt. You want to finish it or – boxing is one sport, well, now MMA, UFC, is the two sports, the objective is actually hurt your opponent. All the rules in every other sport are designed to prevent injury of the opponent. The rules in boxing or at UFC, MMA, is designed to keep you from crippling your opponent, okay?
Right.
So for me, I already accepted that. So I was mentally prepared and morally prepared that when I went into combat, that it was it was just another level of a contest. We were just fighting for keeps. Now the objective is to kill my opponent.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, if you can, the hard thing is to separate the emotion from it. It's a job, and I don't hate my enemy. And you and I had that conversation. You talked about the dreams you had where you. You know, you could see yourself on the wall shooting at these guys and the anger they had and the hatred you had for them. I said, no, you got more. That's why I keep saying you got more in common with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And 35 years after that fight, you're going to want to meet them. Seriously.
Well,
and I say that because I have seen it with the World War II vets, the Germans and the Americans getting together who were in the same battle to talk about it. I've read about it in the American Indian Wars. And I've seen it recently in the Vietnam Wars where former adversaries are coming together and they have this common bond. And that's
well,
the thing
and,
you got to remember.
See, that's the thing. And that's the thing, Rich, when you see that, and I've seen some of these reunions and you've seen it too, the common denominator is that both of them agree that had we met before the war, we wouldn't have been shooting at each other. You know, and to me,
truth is, no. I'm going to tell you, you wouldn't have had a choice. You're put in the situation where you have to.
Right.
Let's go back to, 1914 Christmas.
Sure.
What happened?
Well, they had a peace, unofficial peace
the
treaty.
Truth.
Yeah.
And it wasn't from higher up. These are people, soldiers coming out of the ranks. Meeting each other, and what did the higher commands have to do? They had to scatter everybody together because they couldn't leave them in the same position because these adversaries personally shared an experience and they knew each other. They now knew who they were shooting at, and they had to move them around. That was the biggest fear of the higher command is that Christmas truce, they wouldn't fight each other. Because now they knew who each other was, they realized they had more. And they were.
Yeah. Are you there, Rich?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, there
you
go.
Can you still hear me?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, every now and then you go in and out. But anyways, we've got a couple of callers on here, and I'm going to bring them on here in a minute. But let's run through this real quick. So we talked about the trolls, the different positions, you know, that people have, some of the interesting candidates that we have running for president. We have some interesting candidates. You know, you have, like I said, we talked about Tulsi Gabbard. And for the Republicans, I don't know if they have anybody but Donald Trump. Do they have another person running on the Republican ticket?
Actually, no, there were two Republicans that were actually talked about running against him, and I have heard nothing. I've heard no primaries. There's no one running against Trump. Trump's sealed it. Yeah. There were two people who talked about it. But I don't even know what they're doing, okay, because there are no Republican primaries.
Well, and they were and now a lot of states came out and said, you know, we're not gonna let anybody else on the ballot. Now, what do you think about that? That came
out.
You know, that really happened.
No, I don't know the full circumstances for it. Okay.
Okay.
So I can't speak on that. I mean, if you're if it's like there was a deadline that everybody knew about. And so we're not allowing any candidates. That's fair, okay? Mm-hmm. But if you're saying we're not allowing anybody else on the candidate because you only want this one candidate there, well, that's not fair. You know?
Absolutely,
Yeah, but I don't know enough about that. I would have to have done some research on it to be able to express an opinion on it.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. I can tell you that it's definitely one of those things that that has perplexed people. And then, of course, on the opposite, you have all kinds of people running as Democrats. And some of them are very interesting. You know, obviously, you've got Pete Buttigieg, whatever. And I don't mean to disrespect the man's name, but I'm having a hard time pronouncing it, Buttigieg. And then you have Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and, Amy Klobuchar, which I've met Amy Klobuchar. Actually, I have met personally, I have met all of the senators that are running, every single one of them, because, you know, I work in the D.C. area. So I've had a chance to physically sit down in a room and to talk to them about issues, energy, involving energy. And I can tell you, they were all extremely civil. They were very upfront about their position, you know, which they absolutely opposed, you know, pipelines. Some of them, not so much Elizabeth Warren. I was kind of taken back by some of her responses. And, of course, Bernie, he was, obviously, Senator Sanders. But being able to sit in there and see that, you know, human side of them, I can tell you that they're on the outside, it wasn't a bad conversation. But, of course, I haven't had a bad conversation with many politicians, except for here in West Virginia, and I've had plenty of bad conversations with some of these people. I think that the Democrats have way too many people in the primary, and they have way too many people pulling.
But there's four front runners, okay?
Sure.
The others are in the race, but it's really down to four people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The others are polling at single digits, and
there's
only four that's polling at double digits, okay?
Well, I hope it's
a four-way race right now.
And I do hope, I do hope that they'll find some place for Tulsi Gabbard. I do.
I'm going to tell you, my honest opinion is Tulsi Gabbard is posturing herself for 2024. There's a lot of candidates who will enter a race who have no chance of running. Look, first of all, let's just talk about history. If we're just let's not look at the poll, because all the indicators are pointing to Trump's going to, even the CNN is admitting it, okay? The Democrats are admitting it. All the indicators are in favor of Trump winning. But history will tell you the incumbent will win a second term. Only Carter, the only president, Carter and Bush. But Bush, H.W. Bush, lost. And I was, there's a number of factors. One, first of all, as I've said, the swing voters are the one who decide. And they can only handle one party in power for 8 years. Had such popularity that vice president won, so we got, that's the only time we got 12 years of a single party. All right? Now, my brother argued, and he said it was Ross Perot jumping into the race that stole the votes away from H.W. Bush, who actually, because he was coming off the success of Desert Storm, who could have been unchallenged and would have easily beat Bill Clinton, who was a real underdog, okay, with scandals. Mm-hmm, sure. Oh, crap, the scandals that guy had. But Ross Perot entered the race to steal votes away from George W. Bush. But anyway, it follows a pattern, okay? And so if you look at history, according to history, Trump is scheduled to win a second term, and the Senate will go to the Democratic Party. What happens is whatever party, when you have the president, the opposite party win, he usually has the majority in both the House and the Senate for the first 2 years. Then midterm elections, the swing voters want a balance of power. So they want opposite party to control the House. And because senators are in longer, it takes 4 years before they can change the Senate. So in the election in November, not only will, according to the pattern, not only is Trump going to win, but he's going to win the popular vote, just like Bush did. Bush didn't win the popular vote. But the Senate is going to go to the Democratic Party because they want a balance. But we have something different. And that's where I pay attention to social media. I want to hear what people are saying, how they're reacting to Nancy Pelosi tearing up the speech, okay? How are they reacting to Trump's antics, okay? The fact that the left is referring to Trump's speech as being partisan, all right? Oh, gosh, the reaction to him giving the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Rush Limbaugh. I mean, I knew they would be ballistic of it, okay? But you got to pay attention to how both the left and the right, but really the swing voters. What is the talk? Because here's the thing. We are so polarized, nothing is getting done. The reason that the independents, the swing voters, want a balance of power. They want a president from one party and Congress of the other because they have to compromise. And there is no compromise. And all we've had for the last 4 years is the main focus of the Democrats is to remove the president. Mm-hmm. And, their only reason we didn't have an impeachment before is because they figured they would have the evidence they needed with the Mueller investigation. When the Mueller investigation failed to produce anything, they looked for something else. Okay, and so that may play against them. This is what's different in history. Mm-hmm. The polarization, the partisanization is so distinct that there's a good chance that the Democrats are going to lose the House and the Senate. They don't have control of the Senate. They are scheduled to control the Senate. but they could lose the House because of what's happened in the last 3 years.
Well, yeah. So anyway, so I got a caller in here, Corbett Perkins. Welcome to the show, Corbett.
Yes,
how's it going? How's it going?
Now that the bubonic plague has been removed from my house finally, I think I'm good to go.
Well, I'm glad you're good to go. So this is my metal detecting partner there, Rich.
Oh, really? I was going to say, we're getting somebody new on the show, but you already know him, so that doesn't
matter. Yeah, absolutely.
James is a big socialist boogeyman. he's a big socialist boogeyman. from what I've been told. And
isn't that funny?
And apparently I'm a male chauvinistic pig that doesn't like a woman to be in charge, which happens to be quite the contrary, because I like my woman to be in charge. I like to be ruled by a woman.
Oh wait.
In certain areas.
Okay.
Certain areas.
I can say that.
Certain areas.
I like a woman being in charge, but I just don't like her telling me what to do. Okay.
Well,
You're missing it. Yeah.
I'd like my woman to be in charge, but only in certain circumstances.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, my wife, she runs. Anybody who says the wife does not control the house is a liar. Okay. I have
my wife does not.
Uh-huh.
I respect her opinion, but she don't tell me what to do.
Wait, no, you're missing something. Hold it. No. That's what I'm saying is, no, my wife, she runs some finances.
They're going to get you on social media again there,
Perkins.
She's going
to tell me what to do.
Brother, I can care less about those two ass hat clowns.
Yeah.
If them two want to talk trash about me, they need to do it to my face. Other than that, lay down and shut your mouth.
Yeah.
Hey, Perkins. So
yes,
Rich is trying to get us. So now we're going to kind of switch topics, but we're going to get back on track here. But Rich lives out near Williamsburg, Virginia,
right.
and he thinks that he's found us a spot that we could come and do some digging and shoot some video and stuff near
a
Revolutionary
battlefield. You want me to explain it, James? All right.
Please.
There is a obscure – there was a lot of skirmishes in the American Revolution. See, all right, James is tired of hunting Civil War battlefields. He wants to do something revolutionary.
Well,
okay?
To be honest with you, Rich, I kind of am too, but, I mean, it's to preserve the history no matter which way, no matter what.
Yeah.
But I'd like to switch it up every now and again.
Right. Okay. Here's the deal. All right. See, there is a – keep in mind, there is a conflict about, okay, so this is such an obscure battlefield, and the idea you're coming up there, digging up the history and it's lost. But I went out it's a very small battle, but I am fascinated with it because – 4 miles from my house, okay, and it involved some of the most elite units on both sides of the army, okay, and I've been, since I've retired, I've been doing a lot of reading about the American Revolution, and as we talked the last week, when we talked about how you study history, I always like to start with the big picture, then work my way down to the commanders, get their perspective, the unit and the individual soldier. And when we look at the Revolution, we focus on these big battles, Monmouth, Guilford, people online, marching against each other. The vast majority of the fighting was partisan fighting.
You're breaking up there a little bit, Rich. Breaking up, buddy.
Yeah. I'm wondering why. You're breaking up on us. I can't, I didn't get half that stuff that you said.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. How do you hear me now?
You're good now.
Yep,
okay.
You're good now.
So anyway, the you know, okay, go back over what I said. Is most of the battles we think of, the big battles, every line marching against each other out, but the vast majority of the fights was partisan, where they were patrolling, like one side's foraging, the other side is ambushing them, okay? And
yeah.
Light infantry and riflemen dominated, and dragoons dominated these fights, okay? And these are the ones you don't read about. And this one, the Battle of Spencer's Ordinary, took place 4 miles from my house. And for me, it's significant because it's Simcoe's originally. The Rangers, the Royal Queen's Rangers were formed by Robert Rogers of Rogers
yep.
Rangers. Simcoe takes
yep.
over, great commander. It's Grenadiers. It's I just finished Johann Ewald's journal. These Hessian Jaegers, which were riflemen. Okay, these guys
yeah.
didn't march into battle. They literally ran and got online. And
what about the
Highlanders
around there?
No, they weren't in this fight, as far as I know. Like,
oh,
the
okay.
part of the battlefield we're going to look at was the Rangers, the Grenadiers, and the Jaegers, okay? The other side of the road was the Dragoons, cavalry, mounted riflemen.
Rich, if you ain't tired, you
okay.
ain't shit. So just put that out
yeah.
there.
But anyway, here's the thing. All right. I drove out there. I finally found the ground and it matched. I've been trying to track it down. I finally found the ground and went out to inspect it. There is construction going on.
Uh-oh.
And they're, in other words, they're already destroying part of the battlefield to build houses or apartments on it. So what I'm going to try to do, you know, we would have probably been shooting for this weekend, but I've already done I'm already scheduled for events this weekend, so we're going to probably shoot for like next weekend or weekend after that. I'm going to go out and try to find, you know, the owner of that. And it's a common thing, you know, you find any construction and you say, hey, can we just go through with a metal detector, right? So really nobody
yeah.
can, because that air, that ground is going to be altered. That they've already plowed yeah. up a lot of it. But that, what I looked at on the map, that's where Johann Ewald Jaegers, the riflemen, flanked the American Patriots, and that's a turning point of the battle. Okay, so that's what we're going to be looking for.
Is there any other areas around through there, though? That
yes, there is. There is some small wooded area that I will try to find out who owns. Okay.
Okay.
But the construction area is probably something we're, you know. High probability we're going to get permission to dig on.
Okay.
Hi.
Take the first step of acknowledging the
system. Are you there?
Yeah, I just thought you were going to say that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just wanted to make sure I didn't lose anybody. But
no,
but anyway.
No, I was just wondering about, you know, where they, because they had to camp somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that might have been the battle, but where were they camped prior to that engagement?
See, campsites generally turn up the most stuff. That's what I found too. You know.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering where the campsite could possibly be in. I mean, the battlefield itself will. I'm pretty sure it'll produce some stuff, but. Not as much as what we would find at a campsite.
So what do you think,
they did all their
what's your research
living.
Telling you? You still there, Rich? Yeah.
I think
he can't
him,
hear
right.
us for some he needs to just go ahead. Okay, hold on a second. Let me send him a message here. No, I got you. Okay.
There's something wrong with my headset, so I can hear you.
Zip your pants up, man. That's what you need to do. Zip your pants up.
No, wasn't that? There's something wrong with my headset. My son hooked me up. Everything was good, and I could just barely hear you guys talking. All right. So I'm back on the speaker on my cell phone. Okay.
I think it's too cold to be going outside and peeing off the porch, Rich.
Stay inside. Oh, my goodness.
You'll free that thing off there. But no, if we could find the camp, maybe if we could do some research and figure out where the Continental Army and the British Army.
I have thoroughly researched this fight. I know where everybody was. The problem is, where the Continental Army is, you have to get permission from everybody. It's all housing.
Yeah.
You'd be in somebody.
Well, hell, that's just like
permission.
Here. I mean, there's a lot of places they built a housing development on one of the Union forts here, and you can't get to it because I'm about 98% sure that there's a lot more stuff. I don't know what they did with the dirt, whether they moved it or whether they just built on top of it, but there, this one place here at the Battle of Hurricane Bridge, there was an actual fort that the Union built right there, and they built a damn housing development over top of it. Not only that, but it has prehistoric history to it, too, and not only that, but Native American, French and Indian War and all that stuff, too. But they don't care. That's what I'm saying. Everybody wants to bitch, moan, and complain about digging things out of the dirt, but where are you at when you're not trying to save your history? Now, are you? Because you just built your $280,000 house on top of a Union fortress. So, I mean,
well, all right. Here's the thing: these small skirmishes, the Battle of Spencer's Ordnance. This is a small engagement. It is actually the advance guard. It's the first battle between Lafayette and Cornwallis in Virginia. All right, it is the advance guard. The advance guard is the elite. The advance guard of both armies is their elite. And here's what happened for anybody who's listening. All right, what happened is
got about 80,000 listeners right now.
Yeah, Johann Ewald, who commanded the Jaegers, the Hessian Jaegers, he fought for 8 years. He had been fighting in America as a captain, never got promoted since 76. He arrived in there, I just finished his journal. It's incredible. And when he returns to Hesse, in Germany, his reception, they're returning from a lost war. And you would think this guy had just returned from Vietnam. The lukewarm reception he got from the government. You think the way this guy writes, you think he came back?
Well,
from Vietnam.
I mean, I would have done the same thing to him too, because the only Jaeger that I like is the one that I drink. So, I'd give him a shitty reception too. But where is my drink? Where's my drink?
Anyway, we're thinking of rifleman. A Jaeger is a hunter. Hunter, okay?
Yeah.
And they fought like hunters. They went into battle like that. But anyway, so it is, it's Lafayette's advance guard run and Simcoe's Rangers, and Simcoe had a great respect for Johann Ewald. So they always wanted these riflemen, the Hessian riflemen with them. And so they were doing a cattle raid. They were rounding up cattle to feed their army. And the advance, they didn't know that Lafayette was in the area, and they ran into each other. And if there's any lessons, tactical lessons, Johann Ewald and Simcoe were so used to this type of what we call partisan warfare, guerrilla warfare, they never let down their guard. Even when they stopped, they just made the turn on the road. They went into kind of like a short rest for like at 7 o'clock, and they heard gunfire at 7:30, and they responded quickly. these guys never let their guard down, and they were ready. They were nuts. Yeah, and these guys are good. So anyway, the part of the fight that is under construction is where Johann Ewald Jaegers flank the Continentals. Where the Continentals were is pretty much all housing development. That's the problem.
No.
There, you know, I said, all right, there's three pieces.
You know, being under Lafayette's command, I mean, we probably wouldn't find too much of anything anyway except for pieces of white fabric. You know.
No,
surrender.
Right. But okay, besides bullets.
No,
bullets I'm game. There was a lot
next
of
next weekend fine.
Like, there was, I think, 35 killed and wounded. There was a lot wounded, okay?
Right.
And what you're going to find is, like, the cat badges. That's what you're looking for, is the cat badges.
I don't know. Well, if there's anything cool to find, leave it to James. He'll find it. Me, on the other hand, I'll find a bunch of pop tabs.
Yeah, I will tell you this.
Nails. Okay. I'll find all kinds of nails. Bet.
I know.
You want to make a bet right now? Rich, I will lay money right now. I will lay money on it right now that I will be – the first thing I find on that damn field will be a nail.
If you think I'm shitting you, ask James. Let me explain to you.
Go ahead.
An ordinary is a tavern. Okay. This was a farm area, a plantation that was used as a tavern where people come and spent the night and drank. So, yeah, you're going to find a whole lot of nails, okay?
Well, I'll be the first one to find a nail. I guarantee you that.
All right. Well, congratulations. Congratulations. On that note, though, all right.
Yeah.
I know the thing is we all want to own a piece. For me, this battle is so exciting. And to have a bullet, pick up a bullet from there. But, you know, like the Rangers. All right. The Rangers wore like a crescent. That was a badge on their cap. I forgot what the Jaegers wore. The Grenadiers, they had their own cap badge. Here's the thing. Next door is there are only two museums of the American Revolution, one in Philadelphia, the other one in Yorktown. And the sad thing is there's not a lot of uniform items out there. Okay.
Really?
We had a guy come in and do a presentation. There's a number of what we call roundtable groups. There's one in Richmond.
Yeah.
Then there's one here in Yorktown, Williamsburg, and they come in. One guy gave a presentation, and I think there's like, seriously, maybe 25 Revolutionary War uniforms that are in existence, that are in either museums or private collections. There's not that many. And what I'm disappointed is when they finally opened up this museum here in Yorktown, they have no uniforms. They have, like, epaulets and stuff like that. They don't have cap badges or anything like that. And now I know West Point, because I was up there, they have four original uniforms from the American Revolution. Oh, by the way, if you go to the Smithsonian, this is what I've learned. When the guy gave the presentation, I got to look at the pattern. If you go to the Smithsonian, you see George Washington's uniform. That is not his Revolutionary War uniform, because the collar was a low collar. You see that uniform? It's a high collar. It's a high standing falling collar. That he had that made up after the war was over. Okay. So anyway, there's not a lot of original war uniforms. And as a collector, we all want to own a piece of history. My basement is full of military history, okay?
You'll love it down there, Corbett.
You don't come around enough to see it. But anyway, I have donated a few things to museums because what I say is, you know, if it's a one-of-a-kind of item, it probably should be shared with the public. Now, me, I'm not a hoarder. I do displays all the time. Every time a museum or a county, ask, hey, we want to do a display. We want to celebrate some theme. I dig into my collection and bring it out, okay? But I've had some one-of-a-kind items that I have donated to museums. And so anyway, I say, if we find some cat badges, you might hold on to it for a while, but I'm telling you, it probably belongs in a museum because I know the Yorktown Revolutionary War, I think it's titled the American Revolutionary War Museum, and it doesn't have any.
Well, let me ask you this, Rich.
Replica. Yeah?
Do these people have, any of these museums have anybody to go and if they could, let's just say, possibly get permission to dig battlefields and whatnot?
I'm working on that.
I would actually love to do that for the museum, yeah. Just for shits and giggles, just to go out and dig the battlefield, and they could have whatever they wanted.
Yeah. Right. Okay, now this one, okay, what we're talking about, the fact is,
you're working
this one
right
is
now,
already right? being developed, mm-hmm. that part of this battle, the part where the Jaegers, the Hessian Jaegers, flanked the Patriots, is being, is going to turn into a housing development. We need to get there and start digging now. We need to survey that now. But for the other part, skirmishes in this area. For one, I was approached one time by a guy who asked to battle the Hook. They don't know exactly where the battle was. They think they know. And he asked me, how would you determine? I said, you'd do it by a metal detector survey. Because I was trained on how to do that. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you want, and see, I'm friends with the archaeologist on Fort Eustis, and I said, hey, I asked him, that was many, many, many years, that was almost a decade ago, and I said, hey, look, I know how to set it up, but do you want to be the lead archaeologist on it? And he goes, yeah, mm-hmm. I'd be glad to do that. So that's one we could do, okay? And what I've asked him, I haven't heard back, is Fort Crawford, which is a Civil War fort on Fort Eustis. And they did an archaeological survey of the house that was on the ground, but I don't think it's like 5 acres is what the actual fort was, and they haven't done anything there. Yeah, so that's what I'm asking about, okay? But anyway, what we're looking at is I'm going to go out and meet with the people who are doing
it. That was the fort, too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was, okay? I'm going
go.
Anyway, but no, because this land is altered and it's all going to become personal property. That's something we need to get out there and do a metal detector survey. Yes, I mean there's no saving that part of the battlefield, and that is a significant part of the battlefield. So you know, so what we're hoping for is in a couple of weeks. I'll have permission for us to go out there.
Perfect. Perfect.
I'm game. I'm game whenever.
Yeah.
So we kind of got off target there a little bit, but let's pull back in here to this to some of this political stuff, and then we talked a little bit about what's going on, and obviously. You know, Corbett, you know, you're familiar with some of this, you know, nonsense that goes on social media. Do you guys think that this stuff is distracting Americans so much that they really don't know what the hell to do?
My point of view on all this nonsense here is they're doing all this as a smokescreen. There's a bigger picture. And
right. If
they can get you on... They can get you on the whole topic of Trump doing this, Trump doing that, the impeachment and all that nonsense. That takes your focus away from the bigger picture. You were talking about China and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's part of that bigger picture they don't want you to focus on. You know, hey, if we can get you over here and pay attention to Trump's antics and stuff, we can slide this underneath the radar. And the way to fix that is you elect Charles Perkins 2020, and I will cure this nonsense. I will cure this nonsense, and we will get this thing back to where it's supposed to be.
So
and if
Perkins,
you got feelings, you might want to check him at the door because Charles Perkins don't care about your feelings. I don't care. And all you buttercups from the age of 18 to the age of 24, if you are an able-bodied individual, male, female, transgender, gay, lesbian, whatever, brown, purple, green, I don't give a damn what color you are. Your ass is going to some sort of the military for 4 years. You choose. You choose.
What do you think, Rick?
I mean,
he's running for, he's going, what do you think, Kill Black? What do you think about
it? The problem is less than 30% of American population even qualifies for military service. You can want to draft anybody you want.
Unless you have some kind of physical or mental disability, you qualify, brother. You qualify. And trust me, if you're too big and you're too lazy to do something, I guarantee you, my drill sergeants, my drill instructors, I don't know what the Air Force called. Do they can't yell at you in the Air Force, though. Anyway,
training.
I don't know what a Navy, I don't even know what a Navy person is. Anyway.
Yeah.
They will motivate your fat ass to get off that couch. Trust me. I have a lot of faith in my men and women as drill sergeants, drill instructors, and DIs or whatever to motivate you. And I will give them the means to motivate you because that's where you get all your free stuff from. You want all this free shit?
Well,
I got
hey,
you.
Look.
I got you.
All right, look. You know, my comment is for all Bernie Sanders and the other candidates, we want to give everybody free college. The government already offers everybody free college. All you got to do is serve in the military. But
we get free clothes.
You can't do it. Okay?
You get free clothes,
I mean,
too.
You want shit for free? You don't want to give anything up? You just want to receive? No, there is a program. Now, I will say this.
Yeah.
Okay. Not
you get free food? I mean,
whoa.
Free clothes?
I'm going to say this. Look, not everybody is qualified, physically, mentally qualified for military service. Not everybody has the aptitude. As a company commander, I don't want to take a bunch of guys who don't want to be there.
Hold on. I didn't sit there and say they had to be combat, now did I?
True. Yeah, actually, I'm in favor of you know, things like the Peace Corps. You serve. I don't care what you do. If you go up and give a couple years of your life, serve. You're thinking the military, but I'm thinking
somebody has to be a cook. I mean, I wouldn't want to do it. But I mean, somebody has to do it. If you're not physically fit, well, I guess we'd have to ration your stuff, make sure you didn't eat everything.
And by the way, there's an old saying like never trust a skinny cook. Okay.
Well, you never mess with your mess sergeant, and you don't mess with the supply guys. Those are two guys you don't mess with.
Yeah.
Well, three. You don't mess with your admin clerks neither.
Yeah.
They
can't take and join the Coast Guard because that's not a branch of the military. I'm sorry. Anybody listening that is from the Coast Guard, I don't care what you say.
Yeah, there's a Coast Guard base here where I live, so I cannot agree with
you on
that. Well,
you know what? I hate to bust their bubbles. But I'm just going to be straight up blunt and honest with you. You ain't nothing but Homeland Security. Sorry. I'm like that recent commercial.
Believe it or not, the Coast Guard deployed some of their detachments to Kuwait and Iraq. All right? Mm-hmm. Not me, but I mean they deployed. They did deploy.
They did. They were at the port of Umm Qasr.
Never seen them.
Yeah.
They're kind of like unicorns.
They're a very small brand. They had small.
They're like unicorns.
They were there. Yeah.
So anyway,
no,
so
the only
I'll tell you,
and the only ones I've seen
like
in Iraq was Navy corpsmen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, if you're talking Navy, hell, there's CB.
No.
Yeah.
No, my grandpa was a CB. Them some tough,
yeah,
salty old bastards right there.
Yeah, the CBs.
No, I'm talking about
CBs,
the Proto Pirate.
They were there. They deployed. There weren't, you know, there wasn't, they didn't have a large presence there, but the Coast Guard, their business is primarily up and down this coast, but they were sending people over. Got to give them credit for
but
that.
With the politics stuff, you know, number one, I would change this welfare stuff. You know,
mm-hmm,
you got to, there's roads that need to be, you know, you can go police up the roads. I don't know, hell, there's elderly people that need their grass cut. You'd earn your money somehow, some way, shape, or form.
Actually, no. There are some, okay, look, I will tell you this. There's a lot of communities and states who have tried experiments, and one of them did that. Like the homeless, they started paying the homeless to pick up trash. There's a few communities around the country that have failed. You know, and it gives them you're not just giving them money as charity. You're paying them to do,
yeah,
some kind of work. And they have a sense,
yeah,
of pride in it. And I agree with you on that. Let's start giving people work that they can do. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff I would change personally. But,
mm-hmm,
as you can tell, I don't have a snowball's chance in hell of even remotely coming close to becoming a president. Because I don't. Number one, James can vouch. I don't lie to you, and if I do lie to you, it's by accident, and I misinformed
right,
you what I done,
right,
or I was misinformed.
Hey,
I don't put up. Do not put up with bullshit. I do not put up with bullshit. I don't put up with stupid stuff. If somebody comes to me and says I need you to do this, that, or the other, I'm going to look at you, and if it's stupid, I'm going to look at you and be like, Rich, that is the most dumbest shit I've heard. No, we ain't doing that. No, no, no. Negative. Take that plan back there and rework that thing, because this is stupid. No. And there's a lot of stuff, foreign policy and stuff that I would change. You know, we don't need to be the world's policeman anymore. We need to focus on our own stuff. Hell, there's going to be another civil war coming. I'm telling you now. Between your state acting up and the rest of these knuckleheads acting up, somebody needs to start laying a smack down on some of these damn people. And if there's any of these 1%, 3%ers, 1%, whatever the hell you got, patriots you call yourselves, shut up. Just shut up. Because every one of them that I know here always misquotes Thomas Jefferson's quote about how the Tree of Liberty has to be replenished from time to time with the blood of tyrants. That isn't the whole quote. The quote is the Tree of Liberty has to be replenished by the blood of not patriots and tyrants from time to time. You left the patriot part out. Some of us have to die. Are you willing to take the bullet? Quit sitting there saying all this shit on Facebook, or our ancestors would have done started firing by now. I got one question for you. What is the difference between our ancestors and us? Not one thing. They just had the balls to stand up at Lexington Green and fire the first shot. So until one of these true patriots wants to stand up and quit being black ops on Facebook and whatever else that they claim to be, stay home, pumpkin, and let the real dogs do this stuff when the time comes, because this ain't Call of Duty, princess. You and Billy over here are not going to respawn at the next checkpoint. When Billy's brains are scattered all over you, or an IED blows Billy up, Billy ain't going to meet you back here at the respawn part, partner. I got bad news for you. Billy going home in a box, okay? So until one of you kids wants to man up and put your big boy pants on and quit posting all this secret squirrel black ops shit on Facebook, get out there and do it. Other than that, shut up, because you're not going. I don't need you sitting there flapping your gums trying to get my respect. I don't care what you done, dude. You can sit there. I don't care how much gear you have. When the bullets fly back at you, it's not so damn cool, is it, James?
No. And but what
fire,
is cool?
Fire
what
around
sound really
range
cool?
is one thing, but when they come back at you, it ain't so fun.
What is really cool is that all that gear they bring, we're going to be able to split that shit up.
Exactly, because when you and Billy get tagged, when that, let's just say, I don't know, let's just say a platoon of tanks, a platoon of tracks roll up, and I'm sitting here on my front porch watching you and Billy try to be Billy Badasses out there, and boom, here comes a Sabo round from about 5 miles out from an M1A3, and you and Billy go like 15 feet up in the air, and parts go everywhere. Me and James and Rich are all going to come out there and split your gear up. Like, oh, shit, isn't it? And we can't have this, y'all. This is all mangled up. Oh, look, Johnny over there, he's still kicking. Yeah, he got the concussion part of it. Let's get his stuff before he bleeds all over the place. I'm the ruthless one of the group, brother. Believe that. James may he'll be a little bit more kinder to you. Probably pray for you. Try to ease your mind to let you know that you're going to go meet your maker and try to pray for you. Me, I'm going to be like, I see you in hell, asshole. Give me those rounds right there. I need those here in a minute. Give me the magazine. I need those rounds here in a little bit. I don't care whether you're going to hell or not, Johnny. Give me them rounds.
You know, Rich, what's interesting is Corbett ran convoy ops too over in Iraq. You don't know that about him, but he was a convoy ops guy, so he got to face
all
some
right.
of that hard ride.
We all have
yeah.
one thing in common. We have very,
we've all rode
that? I did.
That's great.
I did mounted and dismounted patrols up too up in the a couple of the villages that Saddam gassed back in the 90s, two of those villages was ours. And then we ran security down the roads and, you know, we did TCPs. And I know how to kick in your door right fast. I know how to – I'm well proficient at home invasions. Let's just put it that way.
Not a useful tool around here.
I'm also a 7.62 and an IED magnet.
Yeah.
Actually, a mortar magnet is what I am, a mortar magnet.
Wait, that's a contest between you and James, okay, as to who
yeah.
is the best magnet for 7.62s.
Well, he's got me beat. He has me beat on that one. I'm not gonna lie
yeah.
about that. I never absorbed one, but I know the sound of an AK-47 quite well, and the sound of an RPG. Well, an RPK too. Yeah, I've heard those a couple times, but no, I've never got hit. Let's just put it that way.
But now, Rich.
No,
he's heard the bees going by his head. He's heard those little bees go by his head, those bullets
yeah.
go by his head.
Dude,
he knows exactly.
Yeah,
those were angry hornets.
Yeah.
Those were angry green tracer round hornets.
Yeah. Nope. I've heard them off in the distance, but I have not heard them where, you know, it's like the gunfire I heard was not directed at me. I did. I went through life without pissing people off. I don't know what your problem is, okay?
Well, see, that's the thing.
Have any of you guys watched any of this Veterans TV going on?
No. Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Veteran humor. What do you think of veteran humor?
Well, the only thing I got to say about that is you better hope that you get the humor. Because if you don't... then you're going to be quite pissed off and angry about what some of the bad shit that they say and they do.
Huh?
Huh?
So if you don't get the humor,
you're just going to watch it and you're going to be pissed off and be like, oh my God, how sick and sadistic are these guys? These are monsters.
Right. We are fucked up in the head. Seriously, it is hilarious.
I'm telling you now, my box of rocks are scrambled. My rocks in my head are everywhere. I got a lot of people talking to me in my head right now, and I'm trying to tell them all to shut up for a minute because the bad ones are wanting to talk, and I'm trying to let the lithium kick in, get the lithium to kick in to keep the bad ones from saying what they really want to say. So, all I can tell some of the guys on here is
thank, or laugh about what
thank God for
saying,
lithium.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, we're down to the last 2 minutes of the show, and we're going to have to cut it off here. But we definitely had a good discussion. We didn't really get a touch on some of that, not all of our discussion. But next Friday we'll be back and we'll continue the discussion. I'm disappointed in all my haters out there because I sent them personal invitations to come on.
What
here.
Is up with that? Well, two of your personal loving haters there said foul shit about me a couple weeks ago, and I can't even defend myself because they're too cowardly to call in. I'm waiting on you, David and Ashley Roby. There, I dimed you two turds out. I dimed you two keyboard warrior turds out. Anytime.
Now, be careful. Be careful.
So if you want to run your mouth to me, I don't care. What's he going to do? I'm going to call the Attorney General.
He said he was black ops in the Air Force, man, so you got to be careful.
Well, I'll take a secret squirrel pack and shove it clean up his ass is what I'll do to him. I done told him once. I ain't no keyboard warrior. I don't know who you got fooled, partner. Anytime you want to, we'll go down to the local gym down here. And just like Rich said, I used to be a Golden Gloves boxer. I did the MMA. I've trained in Muay Thai, Krav Maga, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Partner, anytime you want to square up with me in that MMA octagon, let's do it. Let's do it.
In the cage.
And James can rock my corner.
In the cage, baby. In the cage.
In the octagon. Let's bring it.
The ring, but now it's the cage.
Hey.
It's the octagon.
Corbin.
Bring it. Let's go, David.
Corbin.
Or do you want to see Ashley? Yes, sir.
They will not even meet me in the cage, and I'm 5'6" and 52 years old.
I mean,
run like hell.
Even send Ashley in there if he's too afraid of it. If he's too afraid to face me in the octagon, send Ashley. She's good at running that mouth, and she needs to stay in the kitchen is what she needs to do and make us sandwiches while the men talk. Now, take that.
God.
I've never got to talk to him personally, but I'd love to meet you face-to-face. And let me tell you something. You won't like what you receive. Telling you now, and you can threaten me by suing me all the hell you want to. All you want to do is get debt, you retard, you dumbass. I'm going to call the Attorney General for threats. Well, I'm not threatening you. I'm promising you I will bust you in your mouth.
and
Patrick Dorsey ain't got nothing
now.
More to do,
yeah,
then
we
I
are.
Feel
we're
sorry
off
for
the air
him.
Now. Yeah, we're off the air.
I know,
yeah,
but I'm still venting
here.
Because I wanted to tell him. I wanted to tell him, dude, anytime you want to run and flap your gums, and she's not untouchable because I got women that will slap the taste clean out of her mouth at a drop of a hat. do you not think that the gym that I train at don't have women? There's women that train at my gym that will fight at a drop of a hat. So if we could work that out to where I could fight him, and I can guarantee I can get a woman to meet up with her in the cage, and Butch and them could make some money off this. Hell yeah, I'll slap him in the teeth.
I don't think it'll last that long, brother.
it would too because I toy with him until I got bored. You know, and I'd be like, okay, I'm done playing for the evening, and I got it. I never brag about my fighting abilities, but my right hand will put your ass to sleep. So
mm-hmm.
I used to be
that's
a
all,
super
that's
heavyweight.
That's all real talk, Rich. That is all real talk, bro. And you know, Rich was a heck of a boxer. Still is. I mean, still.
How old are you now, Rich?
I was a light middleweight champion. I fought 154.
I was super heavy.
Super heavy.
I'm 6'4", 225 pounds.
No, no. The one thing I will say at West Point is when you get to the extreme weight, there was less competition. These guys only had to fight like three fights to win the championship. But you're closer to
the
middle.
Yeah, there wasn't very many